With that, let us now look at the plants themselves. There are two things we need to observe about the life of plants. The first is the fact that plants possess the power of reproduction. Not only the plant world in general, but also each individual species develops the ability to bring forth its own kind. That is the one side. The other side is the fact that plants, as members of a comparatively lower kingdom of nature, serve as nourishment for members of the higher kingdoms. Initially, these two currents in the life of plants have little to do with each other. With regard to how plants develop from one generation to the next, it makes no difference to the generative forces of nature whether we eat the plants and get our nourishment from them or not. Two very different sets of interests are expressed in these two currents, and yet in the context of the forces of nature as a whole, things work as follows. In everything related to the inner force of reproduction and growth, in everything that makes one generation of plants follow another, Moon, Venus, and Mercury are working from the cosmos into the Earth by way of lime and similar substances. If we look only at plants that we do not eat, plants that simply renew themselves over and over again, it's as if we were only interested in the influence of the cosmos as it manifests in the forces of Venus, Mercury, and Moon, since these are the forces involved in plant reproduction on Earth. On the other hand, when plants become food or fodder, when they develop in such a way as to form substances that can nourish people or animals, then Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn are involved via substances like silica. These substances make the plant receptive to the expanses of the universe. They arouse the plant's senses so that it takes up from the whole surrounding universe what is shaped by the distant planets, by Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. Conversely, what makes a plant capable of reproduction is taken up from the spheres of Moon, Venus, and Mercury. Now, though this may seem like isolated information, these things that are taken from a somewhat broader context than usual lead over quite naturally from knowledge into practice. What we need to ask next is this. Since the forces of Moon, Venus, and Mercury enter into the Earth and have an effect on its plant life, how can these forces be either intensified or somewhat restrained? What promotes or hinders the Moon's influence on plant life? What promotes or hinders Saturn's influence? When we observe how the year runs its course, we find that there are rainy days and also days without rain. Today, scientists don't investigate much more about rain than the obvious fact that when it rains, more water falls on the ground than when it doesn't. For them, water is an abstract substance composed of hydrogen and oxygen. When water is decomposed by means of electrolysis, it does indeed separate into two substances which behave differently. But that does not tell us anything conclusive about water itself. Water is much more than merely a chemical compound of oxygen and hydrogen. It is the ideal substance for bringing into the earth those forces that come from the moon. For instance, for bringing about a distribution of the lunar forces within the earth. There is a definite connection between the moon and the water on the earth. Suppose that it has just rained for a few days and that these rainy days are followed by a full moon. Something stupendous takes place on earth as a result of the full moon's forces. These forces shoot into all the vegetative growth, but only if the full moon was preceded by some rainy days. Thus, we will need to consider whether it is important to sow our seed after a rainfall and shortly before full moon, or whether we may thoughtlessly do our sowing at any time. Of course, something will result either way, but the question is raised of whether it is preferable to arrange our sowing in accordance with the rainfall and the full moon. For the effect of the full moon on certain plants is very powerful after rainy days, but very slight and weak after sunny days. Such things were contained in the old farmer's sayings. They knew what to do next simply by quoting a proverb. Nowadays, proverbs are considered outdated superstitions, yet we still have no science of these things. People just cannot bring themselves to work it out. Let's continue. Our Earth is surrounded by the atmosphere. Aside from the obvious fact that it is airy, a particular characteristic of the atmosphere is that it is sometimes warmer and sometimes cooler. At certain times, it accumulates a considerable amount of warmth, which, when the tension gets too great, is discharged in thunderstorms. Now, what is the situation with warmth? Spiritual observation reveals that while silica has no relation to water, it has an extremely strong relationship to warmth. Warmth heightens the effectiveness of the forces that work through the siliceous substances, the forces of Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars. The forces of these distant planets must be considered quite differently from the lunar forces. Don't forget, Saturn takes 30 years to revolve around the sun, while the moon takes only 30 to 28 days to go through its phases. So Saturn must have a totally different relationship to plant growth. Saturn is only visible for 15 years. Of course, it also has an effect when it is not actually shining down on the Earth. It also has an effect when its rays have to pass through the Earth. If we draw Saturn's path, which it takes 30 years to complete, we can see that it sometimes shines directly onto a certain spot on Earth, but that it can also work through the Earth onto this spot. There, the strength with which the Saturn forces approach the Earth's plant life always depends on the air's condition of warmth. When the air is cold, these forces cannot reach the plants. When the air is warm, they can. Where then do we see the effect of the Saturn forces on plants? What Saturn does with the help of the Earth's warmth forces can be seen not in the annual plants, which grow up and die in the course of a single year and leave only the seeds behind, but rather in the perennial plants. The effect of these forces, which enter the plants via warmth, can be seen in the bark of trees and in everything else that makes plants perennial. Annual plants, those with short lifespans, are related to the plants with short periods of revolution. In contrast, those plants that emancipate themselves from this transitory state, they cover themselves with bark and make themselves perennial, they are related to the planetary forces that work via the forces of warmth and cold, to the forces of the planets with long periods of revolution, like Saturn's 30 years or Jupiter's 12. Thus, for someone who wants to plant an oak tree, it is certainly of importance to have a good understanding of the Mars periods, because an oak tree planted properly during the corresponding Mars period will develop differently from one simply put into the ground whenever it happens to be convenient. And the coniferous forests, where the Saturn forces play such a great role, will turn out quite differently if they are planted in a so-called ascending period of Saturn than if they are planted at some other time. Someone who understands such things can tell by what will or will not grow whether it was planted with any understanding of these kinds of forces. Although these things don't immediately strike the eye, they do become apparent in more intimate aspects of life. For example, suppose we burn wood that comes from trees that were planted in the earth without any understanding of the cosmic rhythms. The warmth from these trees will not be as healthy as the warmth from trees that were planted with understanding. It is precisely in the more intimate aspects of daily life that things like this show their tremendous significance. Today, however, people go through life quite thoughtlessly and are glad when they do not have to think about such things. They imagine it all functions like a machine. Once everything is in place, just flick a switch and there it goes. They conceive of the whole of nature in this materialistic way. But when people carry on like this, they eventually come to certain practical things in life where it makes a tremendous difference, and then they are confronted with huge riddles. Why, for instance, is it no longer possible to find potatoes as good as the ones I ate when I was a boy? That is simply a fact. I've tried them everywhere. Potatoes like those are simply not found anymore, not even in the places where I used to eat them. Especially in the last few decades, a lot of things have diminished in their nutritive value, simply because people no longer understand the more subtle influences at work in the universe. These things will have to be looked for again in ways that I could only begin to point out today. I wanted to indicate where the questions lie, questions that go far beyond our contemporary frame of reference. In the lectures to follow, we will continue in this vein and then apply ourselves to practical issues with new and deepening understanding. Thank you.